I would like to invite my next presenter, Nico Hong.
Well, let me first thank the organizers for promoting me back to the office of Dean at the University of Namibia. I thought that I ended my term 2 years ago, but I appreciate it if you can just inform my present dean, who's an alumni of this university, that I'm back in office. I'd be happy. We have been introduced to a very interesting Pentecostal church by Professor Kabuena earlier this morning, but a Pentecostal church very different from the one that I grew up in. You know, I became familiar with a church that is more or less unorganized on a Sunday. I had to endure the jokes and the laughs of my school friends at church, telling stories of Pentecostals letting loose doves in the church, crawling on the floor, swinging on the chandeliers, and blowing out candles. Now, I didn't experience that church, but it was definitely a strong perception that that was what the Pentecostals looked like. The Pentecostals was, one of my friends once said they misunderstood the Bible when the Bible says the church is a peculiar people. They thought that he meant they must be a funny people. Now, there were some funny trends in the early Pentecostal church. But what I want to look at today is, how is it possible that such a marginalized group could grow into what Pentecostalism is today? And I'm not looking at the growth in the African church per se, but rather in those groups, or part of those groups that were marginalized and through predominantly political operations and actions became mainstream, mainly then in South Africa, the White Apostolic Faith Mission Church. And I could have also used, if I wanted to, churches like the Church of God or the Assemblies of God in the United States, and maybe even the Elim Pentecostal Church in the United Kingdom. But let me start with the Apostolic Faith Mission. Now look at the AFM. When it started in 2008, it was really a marginalized church. They didn't have any influence. They didn't want any influence. Didn't want to speak to the government. Why should they, by the way? Because the second coming of Christ was near, and the commission of the church was to win souls for Jesus. And by the way, you know, whatever you do, the government will always be an instrument in the hand of Satan. So that was the one side of the story. Secondly, why speak to the churches? Because they are also just part of the demonic forces on earth. And looking at the main church in the white community, Afrikaner community at that stage, the Dutch Reformed Church, why take any notice of them? You know, two of their former pastors became pastors in the AFM after they first became alcoholics and were then saved in the Pentecostal church, brothers Van der Waal and Skierman. So, and the first Afrikaner president of the AFM was also a former Dutch Reformed missionary, P.L. Roux. So why take notice of those guys that can't even take care of their own flock? So the churches were out, the government was out. What about the pleasures of life? Well, you know, we didn't do those things. We were Christians. I remember a song from my Sunday school days that I was taught. We sang it. There are three things that I don't do. I don't smoke or drink or stand in a bicycle queue. One of my American colleagues said to me there was another version that they sang. I don't drink or smoke or neither chew. You know, so we had a very sort of a solid lifestyle. We didn't do the things of the world. Pentecostals were known to be a little bit strange in those days. They were pacifists. The Pentecostal Church in South Africa, the white section, consisted of both Afrikaners and British people who just had a war against each other 7 years before the formation of the AFM, and yet they found each other, but with a strong conviction that God is against war. So that was one thing, anti-war. They were poor, they were no great people. As I say, Van der Waal and Skierman were both former Dutch Reformed pastors, but by the time they got to the AFM, they were drunkards, they were outcasts. So no famous people, except there was one exception. B.J.M. Hertzog, the third Prime Minister of South Africa, his wife was a member of the Apostolic Faith Mission, but that was just about the only one. So poor, without any celebrities or smart people in the church, they were pacifists, they were anti-nationalism. There was a wonderful quote that I found from a 1939 article in the church book, where Pierre Leroux said the following about Dr. Malan, who became the Prime Minister when the Nationalists won the government or the elections in 1948. He said the following. He said, the enemy knows that in our country has to deal with a religious nation, and he proves his cunning by using former ministers who are still using their religious titles but advancing anti-Semitism and nationalism. Is it not remarkable that the Antichrist uses people with a religious background? However, we will only use it, religion, to achieve, he will only use the religion to achieve his satanic end. We read that the first beast, the dictator, will destroy the second beast, the head of the worldly church, after the latter has made a statue for him, and when the people will worship him. End of quote. So even the big Afrikaner leaders of the 1930s were seen as antichrist. And they were, to a great extent, non-racialists. In the United States, one of the early historians of the movement referred to the Pentecostals. He said, the color line was washed away in the blood. Frank Bartleman. In South Africa, the Pentecostal church started in a black congregation in Bloemfontein in Johannesburg. And for a long time, or for a long period, they moved against the whole policy and the whole idea of segregation in the church. Now, a friend of mine, Professor Milton von Espay, he just retired from a college in Canada. I forgot the name now for a moment. But he wrote a book in which he said that the reason of this whole anti-society attitude of the Pentecostals was obviously... Oh, 5 minutes, are you sure? It can't be. Okay, let me do my best. Anyway, von Espay says it possibly has to do with the fact that they were poor, say, they couldn't go to the movies, so the best way to deal with it, say, it's saying you can go, you shouldn't go. In the same way, the pacifism, you know, we are not part of mainline society, so we are against war. Nobody will elect us to positions on school boards or anything else, so let us be against it. It was more a sort of a against the world attitude. The problem for the Pentecostals was, because of this sober lifestyle, the second generation developed very well. You know, they graduated from high school, went to university, and all of a sudden, you had around about 1940, 45, you had a total different group of people. Instead of being poor, rejected, they are well-developed, well-adapted, well-adjusted young people entering into the market. So what happened was this. All of a sudden, a group of these young people said, but, you know, if we can enter into the mainstream of society, we can win so many more people for Jesus. But how do you do that? A pacifist doesn't get too far. So first of all, abandon pacifism. And shortly after World War II, so the Pentecostals were no longer pacifists. Secondly, what about nationalism? The Afrikaners had just won the election, introduced apartheid, they were on their way to rule the country. So what did the Pentecostals do? First, abandoned non-racialism, became very apartheid-orientated. In 1950, they wrote a letter to all the churches, informed them that it is the expectation of the Executive Council that the black people should start their own churches and leave the white churches. I've quoted in one of my articles several meetings of church boards where they told people that you are no longer welcome in the AFM. So we became white, like the other churches, like the Dutch Reform and the other Reformed churches. We're not pacifist, we're white. What about nationalism? One of the leaders of the church, Justice du Plessis, in 1954, wrote a letter to the Prime Minister asking him if it is possible to include somebody of the Apostolic Faith Mission in the extended Senate that the Nationalists planned. And he made the following comment. He said, until 1945, the AFM was a multilingual church, he said, but we realized that this liberal outlook of bilingual churches is not good for the gospel. So today, thank God, we are a purely Afrikaans church. So the AFM transformed themselves in a very short time from a sect away from society and trying to be in the center of society. Of course, the government didn't always trust them, you know, and one of the issues was they wanted to broadcast over the radio, you know, do short sermons and so on. And the question from the national broadcast was always, but give us your statement of faith, which they didn't have, they didn't believe in it. But now, of course, we want to be on the radio, so what do? We create a statement of faith. What they did was they took the Belgian confession, which was a confession against people like the Pentecostals, you know, and they just changed it here and there and gave it to the broadcast and said, here we are, we've gotten the confession. I mean, that angered the Reformed people for obvious reasons, but at least they were able to broadcast then. It cannot be the end of 3 minutes, I'm sure. My watch says there's at least 2 minutes left. Okay, so
we still have
what did he say? You like us 4? Thanks, man. I thought so too. My watch said the same. So, colleagues, what do you have here? Is this interesting church that started as a sectarian movement away from society, kept that image for about 40 years, almost 40 years. Then, because of the changes that took place in the second generation, possibly because of the sober lifestyle that the Pentecostals subscribed to, but a new generation who had a total different outlook on society and 100% bought into this new apartheid society that was created by the politicians very easily. Now, so much so that in 1980, one of the church leaders of the AFM entered into a debate with me after I wrote something about pacifism in the church magazine. He wrote an article against pacifism, but from the wording that he used, everything that he said was, two things were clear. One is, he didn't understand pacifism, and secondly, he didn't know that the Pentecostals were at one stage pacifists. So within 40 years, the whole memory of being a sect was wiped out of the memory of the Pentecostals. They thought they were always part of the Afrikaner community. They were always respected by the Afrikaners. Maybe just one quick story. Eventually, the minister agreed that the vice president of the AFM can become a senator. And he was then allowed into the extended Senate of 1955, I think it was. But here's the story behind the extended Senate. The Nationalist government wanted to remove the colored people from the general voters' roll. But in terms of the Constitution, they had to get a two-thirds majority of both houses, which they didn't have. So what did they do? They cheated a little bit. They extended the Senate from, I think, 50 to 80. That gave them the two-thirds majority. They removed the colors from the voters' roll and then brought the Senate back to 50. So, in a sense, this formerly non-racial church became a racist church and contributed to removing a big part of their church from the voters' roll. Now, last comments. I'm almost done. The funny thing is, when political change came in the 1990s, it took the Apostolic Faith Mission 4 years to accept the new dispensation. The Dutch Reformed Church is still struggling to get unity with their black and so-called colored churches. 1994, the AFM unified with their black churches. How did they do it? In the same chameleon way that they changed in 1940. If you read their submission to the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, I wanted to read it and I've lost it now, But if you read it, maybe I can try and tell you. What they said was this. They said, look, we are not to blame. We are a new generation. And maybe I'm going to get it, then I can read it. That will be my last. I'll be finished then. Here it is. Many of us have sought answers during those dark days. That's now the president of the AFM speaking. He said, but bear in mind that many a time we ask for an explanation, that explanation was given to us by fellow Christians, even members of the AFM, referring to respected international leaders like Justice Du Plessis and others. And we accepted those answers. A plethora of laws made it impossible for the ordinary man to delve any deeper. We are today deeply hurt as we become aware of the injustices of the past as they are being brought to light by our own commission, by our courts and the media. In other words, mea culpa, it's not us, it's the leaders of the previous generation, those people who took us from pacifism into the nationalist party policies. Blame them. We are actually innocent. The biggest miracle of this whole change was that the blacks accepted this explanation and they united with the white church. What can we say about the Pentecostals then? I think, and look, let me say that this story could have been the story of the Assemblies of God in the United States as well. Very little difference between the two groups. What we can say, I think, is this, that to answer Mike's question, he said, what can the government do for a minority? I would say, don't do anything, let the minority do it for themselves. They will get there if they know how. The second issue is it really for the good of the church? I think we may have a much stronger Pentecostal church today than pre-World War I, pre-World War II church, but definitely not a more moral, valuable church. So, yes, the minority can become part of the of society, part of the bourgeois society. Is it always good for the church? I doubt. Thank you.